we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, January the 6th, 2017, and I'm your host, Jen Dobell. I'm joined in studio today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
In the vegan animal rights world, we refer to January as Veganuary, which means Vegan January, and the goal is to have people become more aware of their impact or reliance on innocent sentient beings. There's a website called veganuary.com where one can find all the resources needed to go vegan for 1 month, or we hope forever. Allison, you've heard about Veganuary, right?
I certainly have. In fact, I did an interview with the founder of Veganuary. When was that? It was in 2014, December, if anyone wants to look that up on our website, animalvoices.org. So it was actually a project that was started several years ago in the UK and has now grown to be something that people worldwide are taking part in. And I think you've gone to the veganuary.com website, right? Because I've seen you promoting it. Yeah, so I haven't looked at it for a while, but when I did for just a year ago, like, it was growing and growing then. So it has totally, like, expanded exponentially in years, like every year in the last 4 or 5 years that it's been on. So it's great. People want to take a vegan pledge, go vegan for a month. And of course, the idea behind it is that you're not just going to be vegan like for January. Everything is habit forming. And once you form a habit and see how easy it is, you will continue to be vegan. So, if people want to listen again to that interview that we did with, her name was Jane, one of the founders. It's from December 2014 in our animalvoices.org archives on the website there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome and interview. The Animal Voices archives are awesome. Mm-hmm. If you're ever doing things around the house, like your taxes
house
or cleaning.
I wouldn't put old episodes.
Taxes?
I was listening to you yesterday. I told you that. What was I doing? When I do emails, when I'm at work doing emails, that's when I listen to Animal Voices when I'm not around, which is not very often, but I was away for a couple of weeks. So happy New Year. Happy Veganuary.
Happy Veganuary. And on last week's show, we featured interviews with two people who had just committed to going vegan. And this week, we are focusing on the next step, becoming an advocate for the animals, because I personally believe that we are not going to get anywhere near close to closing slaughterhouses by simply going vegan. I think we also have to educate people about what's going on and try to get them to become vegan as well.
Yeah, and that's why we're here doing this. And I have a breaking announcement, actually. I don't think you know about this, but we're going to be syndicating the show at the University of Guelph's radio station.
Awesome.
So if you're a listener in Ontario or you live in Guelph, just to know that there's going to be more resources, Animal Voices is going to be there. I don't know when or what time yet or what day. I will find out and I will report back.
Okay, sounds good. So in about 20 minutes time, we're going to be having interviews with two local women, Karina Inkster, a personal trainer and author who uses her passion for health and fitness as a way of promoting the compassionate vegan message to her clients, and Rebecca Abbott, who has been a vegan for a year and has recently become involved in animal rights advocacy at the inspiration of the world famous Anita Crines of Toronto Pig Save. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Anita has made headlines worldwide for being charged with mischief for giving water to thirsty pigs who were on their way to slaughter. And it's a very unique legal case, and the judge is actually allowing her and her lawyers to talk in detail about what goes on in our animal agricultural industry, which is shocking to me because it really has nothing to do with the charges of simple mischief against someone's property, and the pigs are sadly considered property. And I really do love that this is shedding a light on the meat industry in general and how we treat animals, and it's opening people's minds to what was once hidden behind closed doors and not talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just really overwhelmed and surprised by how much leeway that the court is giving Anita and the people helping her to really showcase and feature what happens on transport trucks and in slaughterhouses. And they're really going above and beyond, I think, which is great. We love that, right?
Well, I know that her two lawyers are vegan, and this case has me wondering if her judge is also vegan or at least has a very soft spot for animals, because this is all going beyond her charges, and there's so much being talked about that really has nothing to do with them, which I'm so grateful for. So anyway, back to the theme of the show today, which is trying to inspire others to become not just vegan, but everyday advocates for the animals. Like I said, we won't make enough of an impact on their miserable lives by simply abstaining from the needless participation in their exploitation and murder. We must actively engage with those who are taking part in this and funding unnecessary violence toward animals. We must educate people about what they do not know, no matter what the response is. And this does take some courage, because unfortunately there's a lot of pushback and defensiveness with animal rights advocacy. When people don't want to know things that they are contributing to, conversations can get quite heated. So I'm looking forward to our interview today with Rebecca and seeing how that's going for her. And Allison, what forms of advocacy do you engage in on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, I pretty much spend my days and nights working on animal voices. I mean, I think, so I heard you say on the show, I think it was last week, that vegans actually think they lose weight when they turn vegan, but they actually can gain weight because of all the time sitting down doing social media, armchair activism in front of their computers, right?
Yeah, I mean, not that there isn't an excuse. Of course, we can go to the gym, but...
Well, that's what I do Friday early mornings at 6 a.m. so I can get here on time. But yeah, no, I you know, I was talking actually with my brother-in-law the other day, and he told me that he uses Facebook 100% for activism, different kinds of activism, not animal activism. And I said, that's awesome, you know, and I said, I know a lot of activists actually that use it pretty much just for animal activism. I use it about 50% for animal activism and 50% for keeping in touch with friends. And my strategy behind that is, there's a reason for that. And the reason that I do 50-50 is because I feel like I think you have to be strategic in how you do your social media activism with your social media contacts, because not all of them are your best friends or people who you see on a daily basis. A lot of them, I admit, are people from high school who I haven't seen in over 20 years, or, you know, went to other schools with, and I don't see them and engage with them, but yet they see my posts and we know each other from being online. And so I feel like there's got to be a balance of like the happy stuff, like, oh, look at my trip to Hawaii. And I posted another video of me, of my adventures in snorkeling, which is animal activism too. It's appreciating the fishes under the sea. I posted one of those last week. And but then also to balance that out, I also post a lot of stuff that you post, Jen, for example. I noticed today, actually, you posted some big news stories on SeaWorld that we'll be getting to later. So important. Mm-hmm. I really strategically choose my messages though. And specific, like, I think about, like, because I don't want to overwhelm people with too much. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that on the show before, like strategies and social media activism.
Right.
Definitely worth another talk, because everyone's got different strategies. And that's something that I can do when I'm working in a graveyard shift. I can post some stuff on there and do my armchair activism. And I also work on the radio show, of course, too. The radio show really takes up most of my life, because it's not just showing up actually every Friday. I'm actually in charge of everything, as you know. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of responsibility on my shoulder to keep the show on the air and to make sure that we're delivering quality programming every week. Even though you might not hear my voice as much every week, I'm like really doing a lot of the behind the scenes work, such as getting our show syndicated at the University of Guelph.
Yeah, it is a lot of work working on the radio show.
Yeah.
So as far as forms of advocacy that I tend to engage in on a daily basis, I hate to say it, but because it's winter, a lot of my advocacy is fur. And I don't know if most people know the difference between real and fake fur, but I definitely do. And I can tell you that I would say about 50% of the fur on the streets right now is real. And
I look at a lot of the fur. I see that I coworkers hang up their fur coat, and I'm like looking at it, because I actually took sort of like a course at the Humane Society of the United States several years ago when I was there visiting their fur expert. Mm-hmm. And he had like all these different types of furs laid out, and he was showing us like how to tell the difference. And he's been here, actually, too, to do a workshop with the Fur Bearer Defenders. It's kind of overwhelming. And because of that, I want to learn how to talk to people about fur. And I know you're an expert in that in as much as your experiences go. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about that on the show next week. So yeah. I'm looking forward to having that conversation with you, Jen, because I feel like it's a lot to know, because we know that fur is inherently wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just by definition of someone wearing something that is fur on you, it's not your fur to begin with. It's the animal's fur. And how did that fur get there?
Yeah.
Right.
I always have on my phone, on my most recent photo, a screenshot of a coyote in a leg hold trap. And I'll go up to anybody
yeah.
wearing a Canada Goose jacket and say, this is how that animal looked before it became decoration on
your have boat. A story to go to that with that next week, and I'll tell you about it, because I was looking for a picture like that the other day, but I will talk about that next
you're
week.
You're saving that for next
yeah,
week?
Yeah, I'm okay. saving it for next week, because I'm starting to strategize now, but you're going to educate me more next week on next
okay.
week's show, and everyone else as well.
Lots to say, yeah, for sure. But I mean, basically, if anyone's wondering, there doesn't seem real and fake fur. I can sum it up quite easily for you. If it looks like it belonged to an animal and it's flowing in the wind beautifully and it's not matted, it's very likely real. And if it is looking like a teddy bear or matted, it's more likely synthetic. It's quite obvious to me, but I know a lot of people are still confused. Anyway, we'll save all that for next Friday's show. It's going to be a good one, and we do need more people approaching those who they see wearing fur, because we have to start shaming again, because it worked a long time ago, and it's been 10 years, and now people are starting to bring back that trend. So, Allison, you have some interesting news that you came up with before the most recent
right.
event at SeaWorld.
So
let's start with you.
I wrote down in my news, breaking news, because this was breaking yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and your news is even more breaking. But yesterday, SeaWorld just announced that this Sunday, and this is SeaWorld, this Sunday will be the final orca show at their San Diego location, which is the big one
mm-hmm.
of SeaWorld. And can you believe that? It's going to be their final killer whale orca show.
Yeah.
Okay, finally. And we've been wanting this for so long.
Yeah.
So they had a press release that says Sunday, January 8th will be the last run of one ocean orca show at SeaWorld San Diego. This long-running show will close on January the 8th, 2017, marking the final orca performance of its kind. For our California audiences, don't miss your chance to share one ocean in this final season. So SeaWorld has been recently squeezed by multiple factors, as people will know, and we've discussed that very often on the show, right? A lot of dropping attendance has hurt their bottom line, and this has been fueled largely by the film Blackfish. Also a lot of protests. Also the film The Cove. So people are starting to learn, right? And they finally made this announcement this week, and they're starting to come with the times now. And earlier this year, they had said that they were going to stop breeding, right? And I remember that was announced shortly after it was announced that Tilikum, their main killer whale orca, was sick. So
mm-hmm.
you have some even more breaking news to share.
Yes, but first I just need to rant about the whole situation where they were acting as though they were being very humane in
stopping the
shows, but they would not consider release to a sea pen. So it really is still all about profit. But yes, so the most breaking news came to me this morning that Tilikum has died. And I don't know if you know this, but I saw Tilikum when I was about probably
right.
4 or 6 years old.
In Victoria?
Grew up in Victoria.
Right.
And I used to love going
to
SeaWorld.
You used to live there.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about it, of course, as being cruel. And I remember they even had a touch pool where I used to poke my finger at these poor little anemones. And I loved it. And I would wait for them to come back out again so I could poke them again.
Yeah.
Look what we used to teach our kids. So Tilikum, the orca that had killed a trainer at SeaWorld in Orlando in 2010 and was profiled in the documentary that helped sway popular opinion against keeping killer whales in captivity at SeaWorld Parks, has died. And that documentary you may have seen is Blackfish. If you haven't seen it, I believe it's on Netflix. And it's surprising to me that it took people to see a film like Blackfish to realize how inhumane captivity was. I just think that should be common sense to most adults.
And,
but
and Blackfish, not only is it on Netflix, but it was, do you remember when it was broadcast on CNN a couple of years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was when really their stock started to plummet down.
It did, huge.
Because it was broadcast on this major, actually, news network, TV network, that everyone has access to in North America. And I was just thinking about that today when I was reading about that and just thinking, oh, if only we could do that with all the other good animal activist documentaries out there. But that will come. The time will come. Mm-hmm. Because look what's happening now with SeaWorld.
Yeah. And of course, this always makes us think about our own version of SeaWorld, which is the Vancouver Aquarium. And I think a lot of people don't make the connection between that film Blackfish and our Vancouver Aquarium. There are some differences, but I think that the Vancouver Aquarium does a pretty good job of humane washing and marketing themselves as mainly a research rescue facility. And in reality, it's anything but that being the majority of what they do. And I encourage everyone to check out the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered to see what I'm talking about. A lot of the animals that they have in their facility are not rescued, and they have simply been taken from the wild and are making them a lot of profit, and I don't agree with it. And there have been a lot of activists at the aquarium protesting almost every weekend this winter, just in opposition of this, and because the two beluga whales have died this winter, and now those tanks are empty. And I think the concern of most of the activists is that these tanks will be refilled with belugas that are currently on loan to SeaWorld. And we don't agree with this. We don't agree with breeding into captivity, and we don't agree with any more animals in captivity that should be living in much bigger environments, in their natural environments, with their families. So SeaWorld officials said that Tilikum has died but have not given a cause of death. And in a statement, the officials said that Tilikum had faced serious health issues, including a persistent and complicated bacterial lung infection. He was estimated to be 36 years old. And I just noticed on their website today that they are calling him, I think they said something like, this is what can happen to animals in their senior years. And 36 is definitely nowhere near a senior age for a whale. It's typical of facilities like this to say things like this to validate the fact that these animals don't live very long in captivity. Necropsy will be performed, according to the statement, so we'll be waiting to hear about that. And in 2010, the death of SeaWorld trainer Don Brunchot during a performance with Tilikum after a dine with Shamu show shocked the public and changed the future of orcas at SeaWorld parks. Tilikum was born off the waters of Iceland and moved to Sealand of the Pacific in Canada after being captured. While at Sealand in 1992, Tilikum and two female orcas were responsible for the death of a part-time trainer who slipped and fell into their pool and was submerged by them. He was sold to SeaWorld in 91 when Sealand closed. So the documentary Blackfish has caused a significant drop in profits for SeaWorld as the public is waking up to the cruelty of captivity, and I personally can't believe that it's taking this long. Blackfish tells the story of Tilikum, and I'm sure that the views will be skyrocketing today in recent news with this death. And I hope everybody also takes an opportunity again to check out Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, and please share that to social media if you can, because really it is all the same issue that we're dealing with here. Okay, so today we're going to be speaking with Vancouver local Rebecca Abbott, who decided to go vegan in early 2016. She then heard about Anita Crines, the world famous pig trial, which really intrigued her. So she began following various save movements on Facebook. And for those of you who don't know, save movements are sort of a recent activist event where activists get together outside slaughterhouses or processing plants to raise awareness. They hold signs for people in traffic to see, and they let everyone know what's going on behind these walls. So 2 months ago, Anita posted on Facebook about wanting people to start their own save groups around the world, and Rebecca stepped up to the plate. Less than a week later, she was Skyping with Anita, who helped with funding to get signs. The first vigil was on December the 11th, and a reporter from the Langley Advance showed up and even wrote a story on the group. Rebecca is truly disgusted by how animals, especially farmed animals, are treated, and says she used to do anti-poverty activism when she was in university, which was grassroots direct action in nature. So when she realized that she could do some serious activism in the public for animal rights using this experience, she felt compelled to. Rebecca had her first child in 2012 and now has a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and feeling that she lost a lot of herself after having having kids, being a stay-at-home mom, she didn't have many outlets or hobbies outside of this. So doing activism is becoming a part of the family now, bringing at least one of the kids, if not both, to events. She also works very closely with Surrey Chicken Save and has been doing many demonstrations over the holidays at Costco. And the Save movement is exploding worldwide, so a really big year is in the works for animal liberation in 2017. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Hi, thanks for having me, Jen.
I'm so happy to have you on. And I just, like I say in the beginning of the show, I'm always looking for people to not only go vegan, but to get into activism. It is so important because you can make so many more vegans.
That's so true. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning that. Like, I can't believe that it took me 29 years to hear about how animals are treated. And that's why I'm so glad the Save movement is a thing now, and it's becoming so popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what inspired you to go vegan? I always like to hear people's stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, I gained a lot of weight after I had kids, and my health wasn't very great. I tried various diets. A lot of my friends are into low-carb, high-fat, sort of ketogenic diets, which do work for weight loss, but they're also, I believe, pretty unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
So in about fall of 2015, I had really bad eczema. So my face was just covered in these red rashes. And this was shortly after I had been trying this low-carb, high-fat thing for several months. And I was like, I need to figure out what's going on with my skin because I had never had skin issues in my life. So I went to the doctor and she wanted to run some blood tests. A couple days later, I got a call. They said, you have to come in. And I was sure I had diabetes because it runs in my family and I'm a bit overweight. And I was like, I have diabetes. And I was so worried. I went into the doctor's office and she said, well, you don't have diabetes, but you have extremely high blood pressure and you're 28 years old.
Wow.
And that's not a good thing. So I had high blood pressure. I had very high cholesterol. And I was having a whole host of just skin issues that I had never experienced in my life. So I knew I needed to make some kind of change. I didn't know what that was, but my doctor, although she didn't say, you know, eating meat is giving you high cholesterol, she said, you know, you should really try to eat more fruits and vegetables. And I thought, okay, well, I already eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, but I guess I'll try to eat more. Eventually, I saw Forks Over Knives on Netflix. My husband and I sat down one day and we watched it. I didn't really know that much about diet and how it's related to health until I watched that documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so T. Colin Campbell and Dr. Esselstein, like two esteemed doctors in the field of heart health, they made so much sense. I was like, I couldn't believe that this is the first time I was hearing about the dangers of high cholesterol and what we're eating and how it's causing our problems. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
health problems were what basically made me consider a plant-based diet. So
great.
I joined a few plant-based groups on Facebook, and I joined Vancouver Vegan's Facebook group. And I started hearing about this movie called Earthlings, narrated by Joaquin Phoenix. And I was intrigued, and I heard it was terrible, and I had never even really seen slaughterhouse footage before. Anytime someone had posted it on Facebook or social media, wherever, I just ignored it because I was a big meat eater. I didn't want to see it. But now that I was turning plant-based, I wanted to see it because I needed to know. So I sat down one night when my husband was at work, and I watched it by myself from start to finish, and I was crying so much. My, you know, the front of my shirt was just soaked from wiping my face. I didn't even want to get off the couch to get tissues because I was just, like, so enamored with this horrific film I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
So from that moment, I went vegan. So
good
plant-based and then vegan and never looking back.
I always am intrigued to hear if people have seen Earthlings and how they came about to know about it and what their experience was like watching it. Do you know my Earthlings story?
No.
I'm vegan because of Taylor Freeman. I don't know if you know him, but he's quite a well-known activist. He's a really amazing person. He lives in Vancouver. And I went to a Vancouver Aquarium protest years ago and called myself out for my hypocrisy on showing up to a protest for animals that weren't suffering nearly as much as the ones in our food system. And I saw Taylor there, and I'd known him previously, and I said, what can I do to really make me stick with veganism? Because I've tried it before and I've failed. And he said, watch Earthlings. And I hadn't heard of it. Mm-hmm. And I did go home and watch it. And just like you, I was crying so much. And I felt like I was being punched in the stomach, and I wanted to kill people for what they were doing to animals. And then I said to myself, you're doing this. You're the one that is mm-hmm. funding this. When you go to the grocery store, don't be so disconnected. You can't be mad at them. It's you. It's all the consumers, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. And we know what's happening in slaughterhouses. We know that animals are killed. But really, the really gut-wrenching part of it, I think, is how the animals are raised. They're born into these horrible conditions, and they're raised in these horrible conditions. Mm-hmm. They're taken away from their mothers. You know, their mothers are forced to be pregnant all the time. It's just, you know, they're raised in confined, dirty conditions, often not even seeing sunlight.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I was just so disgusted with myself for not knowing about it sooner, but I'm glad that I know now.
So when was that exactly that you went vegan? It was a year ago?
Yeah, I'd say we're coming up to about a year now.
And when did you go into activism?
Well, it was more recent than that. Like, I sort of knew about how, because I am a new vegan, I knew that animal rights activists, there's a bit of a stigma around this whole thing, you know, because people, society eats meat and we eat animal products. And I was, I'm not going to lie, I was a little nervous to even tell people that I was vegan or, you know what I mean? Like, because everyone we know eats meat and we don't want to be seen as like this, you know, stereotypical angry vegan activist. So it took me a few months to even talk about it with anyone, let alone post about it on Facebook or other social media. But it sort of happened later in the year as I sort of learned more about the SAVE movement, and I saw more and more footage of how animals are treated in Canada. Even like, I was just so shocked that animals in Canada are treated so poorly for food.
Mm-hmm.
So the more footage I saw, the more I saw what the SAVE movement is doing around the world as far as their protests outside slaughterhouses or their vigils, it really pushed me because I knew I needed to get involved somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the SAVE movement was it. As soon as I saw that post from Anita on Facebook, I said, that's it. I have to find a slaughterhouse in my area, and I have to make my own SAVE group.
Mm-hmm.
November, yeah.
I saw a meme that said somebody should do something about this. Is something that you think when you see animal cruelty, and then exactly. Your next thought should be that someone is me, because if it's not you, who is it? They don't exactly. have a voice. They don't have rights.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So thank you so much.
We have about 4,000 people in Vancouver in the vegan group.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, you know, at Vancouver Chicken Save, we have 5 people showing up on Saturday
Don't
morning.
Get me started. I know. Yeah.
So, you know, I just want to be out there. I want to talk about it with people, and I want to show what's going on in the slaughterhouses.
Mm-hmm.
You're an inspiration for just even coming on the show to tell us about your experience because, yeah, hopefully this will inspire other people to step up, especially for the new year.
You know, we have our second vigil this coming Sunday, the day after tomorrow, and we'd love it. Like, look up our group on Facebook, Langley Pig Save. Send me a message if you want to come out or if you want to come to a future event, and I'll help you get there. I don't care if we have to like pay for a taxi to bring people from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. I by the way, activists are like that. They will do ride shares. They will do anything they can to help other activists.
Yeah, we'll make it happen. Like, we just want to, and it's good to network. It's good to meet other vegans. So
yeah, I agree. And, you know, back to what you said about how when you first got into activism, you were a little bit afraid about being seen a certain way or whatever. But the more you get involved in it, the more you realize you are on the right side of justice. And
you
then no longer feel that you have to apologize for speaking out or making someone uncomfortable when you're just telling them the truth about what they're supporting.
Exactly.
Yes. Strength in numbers. Keep going. Keep veganizing people.
Amen. You know, people just need to see the truth. So many people don't even know the truth.
Right.
I didn't know the truth until a year ago.
Yeah.
And it changed my life forever.
Do you want to hear a funny story about me telling someone the truth recently?
Yes, I do.
You don't know me that well, I guess, but I do activism all day, every day in some form, and I don't care how I come across to others. So I was in Whole Foods, and I saw this woman and her adult daughter, who was probably my age, like 38, carefully looking at the eggs. And I've been there. I remember me looking at the eggs going, what's free one? What's free range? Which one is more humane? Which one is more space? Which one is the best one? And I thought they were thinking the same thing because it was taking them so long. So I just, as I walked by, I said, they all throw the male chicks into the grinders.
That's a little bit abrupt.
I was in a really bad mood. But I honestly meant it in such a way that it would be received like, oh, I didn't know that. Thanks for letting me know, because I was trying to choose the humane one. I wasn't trying to be like, you know, F you, don't pick any of them. That's not what I meant. And then the mother got very defensive and mad and said, oh, go ahead, tell me everything that's wrong with the world. And she was almost raising her voice. And then her daughter goes, Mom, she's just giving you information. And she really got mad at her mom. And then she said, I was in the cheese section by this point. I kept walking. And I turned around and I said, that's right. I just wanted to give information because I wish someone told me that sooner. And I just found that out 2 years ago. And that's all I meant. And I just said it with like a peaceful, loving look on my face. And the daughter said, no, I understand. And I said, thank you for saying that. And then by this point, I'm in the mango section. And there's the daughter out of nowhere. And she had come to find me and thank me for saying what I did. And she said, my mom's really kind of ignorant on a lot of issues, and I'm always trying to educate her on stuff, and she has this attitude, and it drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, thanks so much. And then I said, are you vegan? And she said, no, but I'm always going on about human rights issues and fair pay for workers. And I said, yeah, it's all kind of connected. And then we had a hug, and that was it. So there's my story.
I love it.
You know what? That woman might be mad at me for telling her that, but now she knows that, and she can't take that out of her head. So there.
That's right.
She might always think about that now.
The older generations sometimes not so well receiving of this information, but younger people definitely, you know, people are opening their minds a lot more, I find.
I can't agree with you there, and I think it would be ageist to do so, and also not just trying to be politically correct, but as someone who engages in activism every day, I get almost more flack from young people sometimes. So it really depends what topic you're talking about.
Yeah.
My mom is almost vegan. She was pretty open-minded. At her age, I think she feels that she doesn't want to be someone who is seen as stuck in her ways because of the stigma around that with older people.
Right.
So she likes to get new knowledge and try to change. I had another question for you. I'm wondering about your family. Are they vegan?
I have two daughters, and I'd say they're more vegetarian because they were raised omni and they're still very young. Like, I'd say my one-year-old is vegan, mm-hmm. but my four-year-old, she doesn't really get the dairy industry, and it's very hard to explain to a four-year-old, mm-hmm. especially when they see that slice of cheese pizza.
Yeah.
But we're working on it. Like, honestly, she won't eat meat. She understands that animals feel pain,
mm-hmm.
and she understands that meat is dead animal, and she won't eat it now. So I'm really happy, and I know that my children will be vegan in this future. Mm-hmm. They just kind of have to make that connection with the dairy industry. If I had them when I was vegan,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't think there'd be a question.
Right.
But it's, you know.
There's a lot of vegan alternatives, and I think they wouldn't even know the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're working on it.
Kids are picky, though. I know they can be tough.
Yeah, it's, you know, and my daughter, she is a bull. I'm terrified of her, to be honest.
Okay, so let's talk about your activism at Costco, because this is how I know about you. You were holding out signs, big signs outside Costco, and tell me how that's been received by people in the parking lot.
Yeah, well, Jane, she's the person who runs Surrey Chicken Save.
Mm-hmm.
She's a friend of mine, and she had some banners printed. One says, Lilydale tortures turkeys in bright red letters, and another one is just mercyforanimals.com. So kind of
great.
Someone's interested, they can kind of just quickly look it up and see what's up.
Great.
So she has these saved, or these printed from Vistaprint, and they're really great. They're really big and really bold. And she tied the Lilydale tortures turkeys near the Lilydale slaughterhouse. she tied it to the overpass, her and another activist.
Awesome.
Over, I think, the number one highway. And, yeah, so she had this banner, and she decided to bring it to Costco one day. Like, she said, do you want to go to Costco? Because I live right near it. So we went. And I also had some of the Langley Pig Safe signs, because we know, like, everyone's buying turkeys at Christmas, and this was just a week before Christmas.
Yeah.
So we did that. We tied up the banners. We had a couple other activists show up, and we just, you know, stood out in the blizzard for several hours. And a lot of people ignore you. They just kind of, they see your signs, but they don't want to acknowledge you. They, mm-hmm. I guess they don't want confrontation, or they don't really care. A few people mock us. You know, one guy even said, oh, animals aren't ingredients. Well, look how delicious this pepperoni is. And he, like, forced me to watch him eat it.
There's, like, always people like that.
I was, like, so shocked. He, and you're right about the ageism thing, because he was only, I'd say, 22.
Mm-hmm.
And he was with his friend, so he was trying to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're right. I see your point now about the age thing.
Yeah, like, now that I've said it, you'll notice it more, totally.
Definitely. Yeah. So yeah. Thanks for pointing that out, because I'll be careful in the future.
And also, as activists, it's important that we don't use any oppressive language or make any generalizations, because that's sort of what we're against anyway. But you'll learn this. You're new.
Right.
I've learned stuff the hard way. Don't worry.
You're so right. And I'm just going on what I sort of see on social media.
Yeah.
But because so many young people are on social media, so it's, you know, it's not really a fair analysis of society as a whole.
You know, you're obviously someone who can take on new information and make a change in your thinking. And that's what I love about you. And you've just demonstrated that once again, not only that you went vegan, but also that you're opening your mind to ageism and changing language around that. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
Thanks for telling me. I really appreciate it.
Rebecca, it's such a pleasure to know you. And thank you so much for taking time for us today. And I hope to actually meet you in person sometime.
Yeah, me too. This was very inspiring.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on the show. And thanks for all the work you guys do.
You too. Love to you, Rebecca.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
So now for some upcoming events in Vancouver. On Saturday, January the 14th, from 12 to 4 p.m. at City Center Station, activists are going to be gathering to engage the public in discussion about what really happens at the Vancouver Aquarium, and also to try to get an idea of what they know about the facts behind the operations which occur at the aquarium. We highly suggest watching Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered prior to attending, as well as checking out the website vanaquafacts.org to learn more about what the aquarium doesn't want the public to know. This is in preparation for another event on January the 21st, the following weekend, which will be held at the Vancouver Aquarium itself from 12 to 3:30 p.m. You may bring signs if you wish, megaphones will be provided, and just a reminder that this is always a peaceful and educational event. You can find out more information on Facebook at Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered or on Van Aqua Facts. Regular demonstrations are held at the aquarium by activists to show opposition to cetaceans in captivity, the needless deaths for their entertainment, and urging VA and their patrons to recognize the potential to be leaders in the use of sea pens and transitioned release. We do support the Marine Mammal Rescue Center. We just do not support animals in captivity for profit. Langley Pig Save Vigil takes place January 8th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Britco Pork Processing Plant, 22940 Fraser Highway, Langley. Also another event, Meditation for Vegans, Sunday, January 15th, all day from 10 to 5, goes for 5 weeks. It's only $20. You can find information at vegans.needmeditation.com or on Facebook at Meditation for Vegans. If you have any animal-related events or news that you would like us to announce or know about, please contact us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or contact us via our website, animalvoices.org, or our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. So now for our next interview, we are going to be meeting a Vancouver-based personal trainer with a compassionate mission to inspire her clients to get healthy and strong without harming animals. Most vegans are beyond tired of the question, where do you get your protein? In today's show, Karina will tell us where she gets her protein, and we will also learn about her new and totally free online vegan program. Karina has a master's degree in gerontology, specializing in health and aging. She works with vegans and vegetarians and those interested in becoming plant-based. She's been vegan since 2003 and vegetarian since 1998. Karina also specializes in training women who want to get serious about lifting weights. As founder and leader of the Vancouver Women's Weightlifting Group, she hosts monthly workshops for women who have had no previous experience with lifting and have fallen in love with it and are getting mind-blowing strength, mental, and aesthetic results along the way. The success doesn't stop there. Karina is also an author of 2 written books and 2 ebooks, the creator of 2 online courses, and a regular writer for the online magazine LifetimeDaily.com. Welcome, Karina.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for making time for us today.
Of course.
You must be busy at the gym with everyone's New Year's resolutions.
Well, you know, most of my clients are pretty long-term, so there's not a lot of people who start in January, strangely enough.
Ah, right. You're regularly fully booked. That's true.
Pretty much.
So you've been vegan for 14 years. What was your motivation?
Well, I started by becoming vegetarian first, so that was 19 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 100% an ethical decision to avoid animal exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, the only reason that humans in the developed world eat animal products is because we think they taste good. That's about it, right?
Yeah.
So there's no biological or medical reason to do so otherwise. So I realized this, and I was only 11 at the time, that it was basically immoral to eat animals. Now, it took me 5 years from then to figure out and to learn that there's really no moral distinction between meat and other animal products like dairy and eggs, right? It's all the same industry. They're all intertwined. So, for example, if you consume dairy, you're by default supporting the veal industry, and there's many other examples. So at that point, I went vegan, entirely for ethical reasons again. But around that time, I've been doing a lot of research, and I realized that there were actually a whole bunch of other reasons for being vegan other than ethical, and I found 3 that really resonated with me. First one just being my own health. A lot of research, especially recently in the last couple of years, points towards really incredible health benefits of a plant-based diet. And I actually got rid of many of my own health issues, which were actually probably a dairy allergy that was never diagnosed properly
mm-hmm.
by going totally vegan. So that was another kind of bonus reason that I came across. The second one was athletic performance. Vegan fitness, as we all know, is kind of a new movement still. So there's still a lot of research that we need on the topic. But it seems from even a lot of professional athletes and people like sports dietitians that there might actually be a performance-enhancing effect of eating an entirely plant-based diet. And there's a lot of pro athletes who are going vegan entirely for performance reasons. So we still need a lot more research in that area, but this is kind of what it seems to be pointing towards. And I think that's a pretty legit reason for going vegan right there.
Absolutely.
Go
ahead. Yep.
Oh, just the last one is this is kind of what I learned during my research probably 13, 14 years ago, something like that, is the environment. Animal agriculture creates more greenhouse gas than all forms of transportation combined, which is ridiculous. And there's a lot of other problems too, like deforestation and pollution. But only in the past couple of years has this idea of going vegan for the environment been catching on.
Right.
Right? Like you may have heard Arnold Schwarzenegger actually just recently in the last year or less is advocating a decreased meat intake just entirely for environmental reasons.
I love him.
I know. So, I mean, he's the greatest poster child of muscle building without meat, right?
Yeah. Yeah. How long have you been personal training for, Karina?
I started my business in early 2011. So it's been just about 6 years.
Mm-hmm. And I want to know about your free 10-day program that you just put out.
Right. Okay. Well, it's a good time because I feel like January is a very popular month for people to make health decisions and think about going vegan. So basically, if you're thinking about going vegan or you're a new vegan, this course can help you. If you're already vegan but you want some new ideas, I would also recommend it. But it's kind of aimed towards people who want to go vegan or who are new to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a free 10-day course that basically teaches you step-by-step how to go entirely plant-based. by veganizing your meals and how to stock your pantry, how to eat at restaurants, how to get all your required nutrients, and you'll get a whole bunch of recipes. It's pretty straightforward. It's basically every day for 10 days, you get an email that takes 5 minutes or less to read, mm-hmm. and it covers a different topic every day. And then there's additional resources that you can look into, like books and films and some of the documentaries that you were mentioning earlier on the show, actually.
Yeah.
And it's all free, and you can enroll at my website, which is KarinaInkster.com.
Well, that's really generous of you to offer that for free. And you're right, it's a great time of year, and I've already sent it to a few people. So thank you for putting that out and all the time that it must have taken you to put that together.
Yeah, it was like writing a second ebook.
That's great, though. You could create a lot of vegans out of it, and you could save a lot of animals. So I would consider that another form of your advocacy. That's great.
For sure, yeah, that's the plan.
And many of us vegans grow very weary of having to constantly tell people that we can get all the protein we need through a vegan diet, or even any nutrient for that matter. How does this affect you as a personal trainer within the subculture, which is often obsessed with acquiring protein?
That is a great question. I think the myth that vegans don't get enough protein is finally slowly dying out, but it's still there. It's still persisting, unfortunately. It's almost like people in our society have been brainwashed to believe that the only sources of protein we can eat come from animals, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and so I see a lot of new vegan clients who are coming to me with concerns about protein just because they've heard all these myths.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's two main points here. The first one is just in case any of your listeners are wondering, as long as you're eating enough total calories that supports your activity and your fitness goals, you're going to get enough protein. It's not hard to get. I actually interviewed the director of nutrition education for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Susan Levin. So I interviewed her for my book, and she said that most of us consume twice the amount of protein we need without even thinking about
Absolutely
it.
Absolutely true.
Right? And so people like me who eat 3,000 calories a day or more, I'm actually getting more than four times the amount of protein I need just based on the amount of food I'm eating, right?
Right.
So to your question, being in the fitness industry and focusing on strength training and muscle building, both for myself and for my clients, it does mean that I do need to focus on protein.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be the case whether I was vegan or not, right? It's just that's how muscles are built, and that's what we need for fuel. So I do need to make sure that my clients are supporting their fitness goals by getting enough protein. So when it comes down to it, my fitness or my role as a fitness professional is to educate and to walk my talk and to show how easy it is. And it's kind of awesome that more and more people are learning that, yeah, protein is important if you're strength training or if you're active in other ways. But it's really not hard to get as a vegan, and you don't need supplements to do it.
Right. Well, why don't you tell us where you get your protein?
Well, I eat way more than the average person of my size just because I'm so active. So I kind of get it by default just based on the amount of food I'm eating. So there's a lot of really good sources that I really like. So lentils, beans, tempeh is actually a great source, and it's less processed than tofu. Edamame is one of my favorite sources. A lot of people seem to not know about dry roasted edamame. It's like the roasted chickpeas, but it's edamame, and it's mm-hmm. way higher in protein. So half of the grams that you're eating of dried edamame is actually pure protein.
Wow.
Occasionally I'll do a brown rice protein shake, but that's more of an insurance policy, like really easy snack if I'm at work. I try not to rely on supplements, and I try to just eat normal whole food sources.
Great. And so I want to know a little bit about how that works for you being around other personal trainers who I don't know what their views are like around veganism and bodybuilding. What's that like for you?
Well, being around people at work who are kind of unaware of these issues, it's kind of the same as being around people elsewhere. You kind of just need to walk your talk, and you need to be open to having discussions. But every gym, too, seems to have its own subculture.
For
right?
sure.
Like where I was at before I moved to the gym I'm at, my veganism barely came up unless I brought really mind-blowing vegan food to share, and then we have discussions about it. But where I'm at now, the culture seems to be a little more skeptical of veganism.
Mm-hmm.
But I see that as a great opportunity, though, to educate and to lead by example And walking the talk is actually one of my most important values in my business anyway, so it works perfectly.
Well, I mean, exactly. How can they see you lifting what you can lift? I've seen you do pull-ups. I couldn't do a pull-up to save my life. I've seen you in your in your bra top and your spandex. I mean, how could they possibly look at you and have any argument against it?
Well, I think there's still a lot of resistance, though, right? Like, I mean, yeah, I can bust out more pull-ups than any other female trainer at my gym. And, you know, honestly, probably some of the guys, too.
Awesome.
But, you know, I still hear comments like, well, that's pretty good for a vegan. And I know they're trying to be funny, but it gets pretty old listening to that kind of stuff for 14 years, right? And it does mean that there's still this underlying belief that there's something odd about being vegan, or that I'm, you know, sabotaging my fitness results potentially.
That's funny.
By being plant-based, which is not the case at all, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you converted anybody at the gym?
I haven't yet, but I do think that I've opened up some minds to the diverse world of plant-based eating. So as an example, a bunch of the trainers that I work with who are not vegan, but they've read my book just to get new meal ideas.
And, oh, great.
And ways of increasing their plant-based food. So they're not vegan, but they're eating more vegan food. So I think that's progress, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's smaller steps. I mean, I think even when we're not full-on converting anyone, which does happen too, of course, we're still exposing people to new ideas and we're still affecting other people's diets. And it all adds up and it's all progress.
Well, it's like I always say, you can put information in someone's head and they can't take it out. That's the best thing. Even if they didn't want to hear it, it's there now. Just like, I don't know if you heard my story earlier about going through Whole Foods and telling the ladies that all the chicks go into the grinders.
Yes, I did.
That woman was mad, but she knows that now and she can't unknow that. Ha ha.
Exactly.
It's planting seeds, is what I always say.
Yeah, they might just shrivel up and die, but it's still in there.
Exactly.
I want to hear some success stories. Do you have any stories where maybe you took on a new client who was totally opposed to going vegan and you completely turned them around or anything like that?
Well, I have one story that sticks out in my mind of someone who was actually vegan already. So it's not really a conversion story, but we all know that just because you're on a vegan diet doesn't mean you're on a healthy diet, right?
Right.
I mean, Oreos and French fries and Skittles, those are all vegan.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a client, her name's Carmen. She's been training with me since 2014, where she kind of got to the point where she let her fitness slide. Her life was super busy. I mean, it happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just walking a few blocks would leave her out of breath, which is not a good way to be spending mm-hmm. your life, right?
Yeah.
So she had never really been much of a gym person, but she really loved boxing, and I knew that because I train her partner as well, who's another vegan client of mine. So I said, hey, let's do some boxing. I can show you some fun moves, which was basically just a cover-up for the fact that I knew what she really needed, which was a nutrition plan and strength training. So she came into the gym, and I realized that one of the missing pieces of Carmen's plan was that she wasn't really focusing on what she was eating. I mean, yeah, she was pretty much vegan, not entirely at that point, but it wasn't supporting her fitness. So we made a plan. We made sure that she was getting her really good whole foods protein sources. She added strength training to her program. And we fast forward about a year, and she does her first triathlon, which is something that she never thought she would do, which
wow.
is amazing. And I'm telling you this story because she's now someone who embodies being a vegan athlete. And she came from somewhere where walking a few blocks winded her, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's completely transformed her lifestyle. She is now, fast forwarding another year, because she's still training with me, she's now doing like a full season of cycling events. So this past summer, she did a cycling race that was 140 kilometers, which
wow.
is crazy, even for me.
Mm-hmm.
She actually cycled from Burnaby all the way to Harrison Hot Springs for a charity ride, which is 120 kilometers.
Awesome.
So anyways, she basically exemplifies vegan fitness. And she also is an example that it's never too late to start. She's in the best shape of her life, and she turns 50 this year.
That's great. We should have her on the show. Tell her I want to have her on the show.
That would be awesome. I think she's listening right now, so we should get her on.
Okay. Hi. Thanks for listening.
Hi.
Animal Voices every Friday. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your book, Vegan Vitality, and then also how we can learn more about you just before we say goodbye here?
Yeah. So Vegan Vitality is a cookbook, so it has more than 100 recipes that I made specifically for active living, by the way. So it's a cookbook, and it's also a healthy living guide. So some of your listeners, and you, I'm sure, know of Robert Cheek, who's a vegan bodybuilding legend,
and
right?
We've had him on the show before, too.
There you go. So he wrote the foreword, which is really awesome. And there's also 16 interviews with other vegan athletes. You could get their tips and their recipes, their secret superpowers. So it's basically a resource for vegans who want to make fitness a part of their lives. I thought there were enough cookbooks out there in the market. I kind of wanted to make something different with recipes that were specifically for people who want to be active in their lives. So that's the book. You can learn more about it at my website, which is KarinaInkster.com.
Great.
And there's I think you mentioned in the intro, the Vancouver Women's Weightlifting Group that I run. So we meet up every month in Vancouver, and we kind of workshop different things every month. We have an event coming up on the 14th, so it's coming up next week, teaching people how to deadlift with a kettlebell. So we're going to do 4 different variations of kettlebell deadlift. And there's the free course on my website. There's more about my books, and it's all at KarinaInkster.com.
That's awesome. Is there room in the weightlifting course still?
The one coming up on the 14th, yes. So it's all pre-registered. You can actually join on my website. So you can just go to KarinaInkster.com, and there'll be a link there for my women's weightlifting group.
Awesome.
I'd love to see you there if you're free.
That's why I'm asking. And I need to get my button gear. Also, we have all your information on the animalvoices.org website, along with everything else we've talked about today. So thank you so much, Karina. What a pleasure to, I haven't met you in person, but to have you on the show. And I would love to stop in and see you. We both work in the same neighborhood, and I know Chad at your gym there. And so I'll pop in and say hi soon.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I'd love to see you there.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks.
I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay, see you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us next week for the show on January 13th. As I mentioned before, we'll be having a discussion on how to speak to people wearing fur about fur. We'll also have a feature interview with Anna Pippas of the nonprofit organization Animal Justice. She'll be speaking with us about the impending farmed animal transportation laws that the Canadian Food Inspection Agency will be passing soon, and it's up for public commentary right now for 75 days. So to end the show, we have a song dedicated to Tillicum. It's called The Whale Song by Modest Mouse. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
find a way out.
Pull the tide.